Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
The Electoral Commission of Namibia provides an opportunity for all eligible voters who did not register in the previous voter registration process. The supplementary registration of voters will take place from the 4th until the 19th of August 2025. This will allow all eligible Namibian citizens to participate in the 2025 Regional Council and Local Authority elections. If you are an 18 years or older Namibian citizen without a valid voter's card, and if you are able to identify yourself, then don't miss this opportunity to register as a voter. Democracy thrives through participation. Get involved, step up, and register to vote.
And obviously they're bringing us into the scope specifically of this morning's particular broadcast. Dear listeners, welcoming you once again. And, you know, that on a Sunday morning, technically, which is not always, how should I say it? Because it's obviously based upon the weather, because the weather is never one out there to be your bestie or be your best friend in any manner. But nonetheless, we brave it. We obviously engage with each other, and we still stay tuned here in terms of the daily discussions as well as also interactions that we bring you here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. Now, as we start off with this morning's particular My Sunday Morning Take, the particular platform, ultimately, where we look at everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and a little bit of everything else in between, is a unique particular discussion that helps us understand sort of like charting the particular course of independent nations. Now, last week, we started off on the discussion of what actually led to the failure of the League of Nations. Now, remember, I indicated back in last Sunday's particular show that if you went and Google searched or looked up, you know, just with that phrase, what was the failure of the League of Nations? All of the particular searches would bring you up the invasion of Manchuria, which is technically a part of China. And that invasion, obviously, in history, was conducted by the Japanese. But there was something before that, technically, which literally laid the foundation for the whole idea of the League of Nations to be faulty, to be built on a weak foundation. And that particular foundation was based upon the negotiations that took place from 1918, 1919 into 1920 at the Paris Peace Conference. Now, if you stem obviously from that particular discussion, obviously where we looked at the idea in terms of statehood, nationhood, and as well as also the recognition of everyone in terms of being equal, in terms of a universal law of human rights, as we now know it. It's known as that particular universal declaration, as well as also the aspects in terms of what makes the foundation of international law supposed to be. There's the UN Charter, which forms part of that. If you're not a country that's party to it, obviously you won't, you know, recognize the thing. And neither would anyone else recognize you under that, but that particular legislation or that particular set of laws. For example, there's a country like Myanmar and a country like North Korea. However, as we obviously step into this realm of looking into unique engagements, and this is based upon human-to-human engagements and interactions that defined a specific aspect of time, defined a specific period of time, and ultimately also charted a particular course for people involved. This particular morning itself, we take a look at another particular peculiar and interesting scenario as well. Well, peculiar in terms of age, interesting because of the foundation that this particular first event held. So, if you did not know, now that you will know just in a few seconds, if you ever had to go and think about which country on the continent is technically Africa's oldest independent nation. Now, in many cases, you probably might come up short with ideas or with, you know, first off, you know, indications of, you know, an independent country. It's probably because not many people speak about Liberia. And Liberia is Africa's oldest independent nation, concurrently independent nation. Independent. A scenario obviously which is a peculiar one to technically firstly bring to your attention. The second aspect of the peculiarity has been in terms of who founded it specifically on behalf of the inhabitants, meaning the citizens that are currently there. So, for this morning's particular engagement, dear listeners, we're going to be taking a look at Liberia, and Liberia's particular existence, its rocky history since inception as a nation, as an independent nation, all the way up until today, with the scale of colonization that took place in between, they were colonized in between, with the scale of civil wars, as well as also political instability, and more, as we obviously get into the particular subject matter of Liberia. On that particular note, dear listeners, we'll be taking a quick musical break and we'll be coming back right after that. Come back there from the specific musical break there with the sounds of Aaron Fraser with the song Dime featuring Kanka Musa, and ultimately welcoming you to your Sunday morning, your early morning, Sunday morning programming here on your number one talk radio station, and that being Eagle FM, obviously, and you are on the program that is My Sunday Morning Take. Now, where we left off specifically before the abrupt musical break was getting into the particular aspects of why I'm saying Liberia is Africa's oldest independent nation. So, small little trivia, piece of trivia for you to start off on. Liberia was technically founded in 1846. However, there had been people there a little bit earlier than 1846, specifically those particular persons who were involved in the independence of Liberia or the establishment of Liberia. For example, there's one of the particular most notable characters or notable, if you can call it sort of like people involved or prominent people involved with the foundation of Liberia that had been there since 1829. Now you'd be asking me, Dwight, so particularly what is so special about Liberia? Well, Liberia was created, its founding population wasn't anything born out of an independence in terms of an Africa in a scenario of saying, hey, listen, we are fighting off some form of colonialism and aspect in terms of saying we now wish to be independent. No. Nothing of that sort. Actually, Liberia was created as an independent nation for former North American slaves. What am I describing to you? A piece of land was designated and people were told, you can now get off the boats and the ships and you now may make what you have, what you see there, that is yours. Make with it what you have, what you wish. I'm not joking, guys, because we're obviously going to get into the gist of this morning's particular review of the particular literature at hand. Now, as you're obviously looking into the particular aspect of what I'm outlining for you, Liberia is on the West African coast. And Liberia is found literally just below the Gambia, if I can call it the Gambia. But it's just below, it's as the African West Coast obviously curls up towards where you would find Mauritania and Morocco. Just below that you would find, not just below, like a couple of countries from there, from Mauritania specifically, you would find Liberia. Now, Liberia is a country obviously that has low and sandy coastal plains, obviously in terms of describing the geography, with rolling hills and its dissected plateaus are obviously found further inland, and the country is home to a lush rainforest that contains a rich diversity of flora and fauna. Now, Liberia is neighbor to Sierra Leone on the one side, to its south, and neighbor to Côte d'Ivoire, the Ivory Coast, to its west. Now, it is the only African country. Well, my literature review indicates here specifically the only black state in Africa, obviously now to describe itself or to differentiate itself from other particular countries in the neighborhood or even in North Africa or even on East Africa. As the only African country never to have been subjugated to colonial rule and is Africa's oldest republic. Now, it was established on land acquired for people who formerly had been enslaved in the U.S. by the American Colonization Society, which founded a colony at Cape Mesurado in 1821. In 1824, the territory was then named Liberia, and its main settlement was named Monrovia, now which is currently its present-day capital. Now, Liberian independence was actually proclaimed in 1847, and its boundaries were expanded. The country enjoyed relative stability until a rebellion in 1989, which escalated into a destructive civil war in the 1990s that did not fully cease until 2003. Now, this is as the country's first post-conflict elections, which obviously were held in 2005, were noteworthy for the election of one of Africa's first female presidents, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, to presidency, as she was the first woman to be elected head of state on the continent. Now, the important thing obviously that stems from this particular scenario of Liberia's particular formation and its existence has been in terms of how long the aspect of Liberia's particular existence, had been based upon. Now, when you obviously take a look specifically into what happened and what led up to Liberia being created, it was technically the immigration of African Americans, both freeborn and recently emancipated. And obviously, this was all funded and organized by the American Colonization Society. Now, I know the particular word itself is pretty weird, but the American Colonization Society, which was initially the Society for the Colonization of Free People of Color of America. Yes, this was the organization's name. Was an American organization that was founded in 1816 by Robert Finley to encourage and support the repatriation of freeborn people of color. So, it probably would be one of the first ideas that you could find of an NGO, technically. Now, the funny thing, and it's not really funny because I use the word funny because this was people that were allowed to establish themselves in an independent scenario on the West African coast. But the funny thing was that obviously in the early days of establishing the boundaries, the ways of life and everyday governance and so forth in this country, the mortality rate was technically very high between the earliest settlers in Liberia. Now remember, these were people that were taken from plantations in the US after they were obviously emancipated. Some of them obviously were people that were freeborn, as you would have heard. And they were put on a boat or ships, multiple, and then they were transported back across the Atlantic Ocean to West Africa. Now, imagine most of these people are not people that know how to technically work land, that you don't know what kind of crop you can grow there. You don't know what kind of agricultural endeavor you can pursue there. You don't know, what the particular climate is like after, because I'll explain. When it comes to the question of climate, and when someone always asks you the question in terms of what is an area's climate in a specific zone. Now, I learned from high school geography. Yes, high school geography. I'm using that as my basis of authority. I remember I once asked my teacher back then in terms of why does it say in the textbook you should have been living or you should have data of at least 30 years regarding a specific territory to understand its entire climate. And what was explained in the textbook was because the climate can change, for example, in a 5-year span. You need to know in terms of when there are low particular performance areas, for example, like droughts that come about, or severe storms. How often do these severe storms happen? Or something, for example, like severe rainfall or floods or, severe winters. Strong winds, all those particular things, or how often does a drought occur? And it was indicated in that the response that I got, obviously, some one of the most favorite teachers I ever had, but, the particular teacher noted, it's to understand fully what the full spectrum of, climatic conditions are in a specific territory. Now, obviously, modern day scientists have got mountains of first-hand data from hundreds and 200 years ago from other researchers, first observers, as well as also first explorers and the likes. Because even if you were like an explorer, you wrote down everything that you saw, witnessed, and encountered, many people would then obviously realize that your work, technically, or what you wrote down, your observations, are gold. They are foundational gold to work from, because then it's a scenario of, okay, these are the kinds of conditions that persist here, these are the kind of people that live here, kinds of fauna and flora that are here, and kinds of particular weather patterns that you can experience, because the particular person observing was there for X percentage of time. Now, the aspect of, obviously, of what was the founding population of Liberia was that, because I cited to you, dear listeners, that it seemed that the earliest settlers, specifically in the newly established Monrovia, not Monrovia, the newly established Liberia, had a high mortality rate, specifically that they, because they had to deal with the conditions at hand. Now, of the 4,571 immigrants who arrived in Liberia between 1820 and 1843, only 1,819 actually survived, which was about almost 40% of the original tally of people that arrived there. Now, you could ask yourself, ultimately what was going on, because in a span of 23 years, losing almost 60% or more than 60% of your founding population is pretty bad for any particular nation. I mean, even if you look at it in modern day, the rate of replacement, it's not to be confused with replacement theory, please guys. The rate of replacement is technically where government planners look at births per year or births per 1,000 people. Births per women versus deaths per 1,000 people. And they obviously then, balance the two particular metrics out with each other in terms of understanding, okay, so we have so many women in the country, so many of them are of this particular age, so many of them are this particular age under the consideration for being an adult. And those that are left, they're the ones that are supposed to be carrying the particular burden of, of the birth rate of the country. Meaning, in many countries, it was scheduled or it was planned that 2.1 children per woman, obviously. And then, obviously, things started going slightly haywire for many particular countries, since COVID. However, getting back to the Liberia discussion, in 1846, the first black governor of Liberia, Joseph Jenkins Roberts, requested the Liberian legislature to declare independence, but in a manner that would allow them to maintain contacts specifically with the American Colonization Society. Now, the legislature called for a referendum in which Liberians chose independence. On 26 July of 1847, a group of 11 signatories declared Liberia an independent nation. Now, the ACS, as well as several northern state governments, and local colonization chapters continued to provide money and immigrants as late as the 1870s. Now, the US government declined to act upon requests from the ACS to make Liberia an American colony or to establish a formal protectorate over Liberia. But it did exercise a moral protectorate over Liberia, intervening when threats manifested towards Liberian territorial expansion or its sovereignty. Now, upon Liberian independence, Roberts was elected as the first president of Liberia. Now, Liberia retained its independence throughout the scramble for Africa by the European colonial powers during the late 19th century, while remaining in the American sphere of influence. Now, you can obviously understand specifically why is because the Americans would have communicated to the Europeans at that stage that the Monroe Doctrine was obviously fresh, and then, the Europeans were explained, hey, listen, you guys, stay off this small tract of land, this little country. It's under my particular sphere of influence. Now, the American president at the time, William Howard Taft, made American support to Liberia a priority of his foreign policy. From the 1920s, the economy focused on the exploitation of natural resources. The rubber industry, specifically the Firestone Company, dominated the economy. Until 1980, Liberia was controlled politically by descendants of the original African-American settlers, known collectively as the Americo-Liberians, who made up a small minority of the population. The violent overthrow of the Americo-Liberian regime that year led to two civil wars that devastated the country. The first from 1989 to 1997, and the second was from 1999 to 2003. Now, that's obviously, yes, you guys can look into the particular scenario of the fragility when it comes to, particular aspects of Liberia's particular independence. Now, when people obviously ask the particular question of, what's up with this particular country in terms of if it was for so long independent, why do not many people know about this particular country's particular existence? Here's the thing. Liberia itself wasn't a territory when that didn't have any people there. Let me explain again. When these settlers landed there in 1820, landed on this particular coast, it wasn't a coast, it wasn't a zone of West Africa which was void of any people living there. There were people living there. It's, for example, the same particular things on the previous discussions of my Sunday morning take, specifically taking a look at the existence of certain particular countries that came into being because of colonization. And in many of those particular instances, the European settlers or the European explorers and discoverers would show up and say, there was no one here on the beach. Now, obviously, if your civilization is not one based upon building massive port facilities on a beach or on a coastline, so as to indicate to other people, hey, listen, we are a civilization that builds ports and, other sophisticated infrastructure, but your civilization is one based upon, hey, you know what? We've got canoes and there's the beach. We don't need to construct anything because the canoe and the beach are adequate enough for us to literally land on the beach. No. And that's obviously where that other particular term that, that was widely used during the scramble for Africa as well, and also for Australia, but it actually emanated from Australia, known as terra nullius, where if it was not a European settler that discovered, that saw or founded this particular territory, any aspect of sovereignty that was claimed by the inhabitants, indigenous communities or peoples or populations of that specific territory would still not be recognized because it did not conform to the thinking of the European settlers at the time of what an independent nation is. So only they could decide what an independent country is or was. So, if you had to look at the ethnic makeup or the ethnic makeup of the Liberian population today as it is, the Liberian population is classified into three major groups. You've got the indigenous people that were there, that were brought, that were there when, these immigrants were brought there by the Americans, who are in the majority and who migrated from the Western Sudan and in the late Middle Ages. Here from the 1500s, 1600s, thereabout. Then you've also got the black immigrants that came from the US. These are mostly known historically as the Americo-Liberians. And then you've got the West Indies. Okay, no, sorry. They also came from the West Indies, from the Caribbean. And then you've also got the other immigrants that came from neighboring Western African states who came during the anti-slave trade campaigns and European colonial rule. So Monrovia at that stage was sitting in a little bit of a pressure point. When the scramble for Africa and the other particular aspects of the West African slave trade obviously kicked off, many villages, small human settlements and communities were obviously uprooted, forced to leave and forced to seek refuge somewhere else, which is safe, away from obviously, you know, organizations. Yeah, and there were organizations literally. You could think of them as modern day human trafficking organizations, but the organizations back then were obviously legally recognized human trafficking organizations. And they obviously had to flee. And they would run to Liberia to go and hide, to go and seek safe refuge. Now, the downside of this particular aspect had been specifically that the Americo-Liberians are mostly closely associated with the founding of Liberia. And most of them actually migrated to Liberia, as mentioned, between 1820 to 1865. With continued migration having been intermittent. Now, this is obviously as it leads us into the particular aspect of the history of Liberia itself, the territory. Now, it is believed that many of the indigenous peoples of Liberia migrated there from north and east, from the north and the east of Africa between the 12th and the 6th centuries AD. As mentioned, from the medieval periods, as I indicated, or the Middle Ages. The first time any Europeans actually touched base on that side of West Africa, remember, guys, when I spoke about Sao Tome and Principe, which was technically one of the oldest colonial, colonial installations, but yeah, technically, yes, it was on the African continent, even though it's on islands, was that the Portuguese were there pretty early. Now, the Portuguese explorers established contacts with people of the land later known as Liberia as early as 1462. Now, they named the area Costa da Pimenta, meaning the Pepper Coast. Now, why they called it the Pepper Coast was because of a specific plant, or it was also known as the Grain Coast. So, the Portuguese had two names for Liberia. Because of the abundance of the Melagueta pepper, which became desired in European cooking. If you don't know what the Melagueta pepper was, it is, and it still exists, this particular plant. It is a species of the ginger family. And it's close related to cardamom, and its seeds are used as a spice. Obviously, it has a particular flavor to this particular cooking that was obviously done back then. So, in 1602, the Dutch then established a trading post at Grand Cape Mount. If you don't know where Grand Cape Mount also is, once again, that's a part of Liberia. It's one of, if you can call it like provinces or constituencies of Liberia. Grand Cape Mount is a county in the northwestern portion of Liberia, and the Dutch actually then later on destroyed their particular trading post there. In 1663, the English also established a few trading posts on the Pepper Coast. No further known settlements by Europeans occurred until the arrival in 1829 of the free slaves or free black people from the United States. But then, the literature that I've got here uses a very interesting term. They identify this immigration or this influx of former American, North American slaves, as well as also freeborn peoples from the, from America, specifically the US, as colonization. Now, I didn't want to put the word colonization there, but you can to an extent, because in some cases, it's a scenario of understanding. Are these people actually coming to the right zone, which were formerly, you know, which is obviously in Africa, but are they from the region or not? Because remember, as defined, obviously the indigenous persons that would be living there would be going like, who are these, all these new strangers being dropped off here by ship? The interesting thing about that particular scenario is that from around 1800 in the US, people opposed to slavery were planning ways to liberate more slaves and ultimately to abolish the practice itself. Now, at the same time, slaveholders in the South actually opposed having free black people in their states, meaning once these former slaves were allowed to leave the plantation areas, obviously where they worked a lot, there was a lot of resistance to them actually being in the same territories or, you know, neighborhoods or even vicinities. So, this is obviously, as many of these particular former slave owners indicated, that they believed that many of the now recently freed persons would actually threaten the stability of their particular societies that they were still conducting. Now, this is before the abolition, the abolishment of slavery. Now, slaves were gradually freed in the north of the United States, although more slowly than generally serialized, that there were actually hundreds of slaves in northern states in the 1840 census, and in New Jersey in the 1860 census. Now, the former slaves and other free peoples suffered considerable social and legal discrimination, and they were not citizens and were seen by many as unwanted foreigners who were taking jobs away from predominantly white people by working for less. Now, if you don't know, dear listeners, this is technically before Abraham Lincoln actually came about in terms of, you know, him becoming a president. Now, you're going to ask me, what does Lincoln have to do with this discussion? Because Lincoln technically wanted to convert, wanted to give full particular citizen rights to many of these former slaves and freeborn peoples in the scenario of technically extending voting rights to them as well. So if you did not know, voting rights was a contentious point when Lincoln became president, which literally led to the American Civil War in the 1860s. You can look it up. The whole American Civil War. And you would see, even find that the American storytellers would just talk about this Civil War, the things that happened in the Civil War, but they will never explain to you what led to the Civil War. And it specifically was an economic discussion. You bet your bottom dollar it was. It was a profound economic scenario. It was a profound economic disruption. The American southern states did not like this particular interventionist policy. As you just heard, like I explained to you, the recently freed or emancipated persons of who were in slavery or in servitude were considered as a threat to stability. Now, what stability, would you ask? Well, it seems like many of the particular landowners back then, and they were all farmers with plantations, because you had the tobacco industry of the US, the cotton industry of the US, there was the sugarcane industry as well, and there was another one. There was another one that was also another particular sort of like farming or agricultural process that was also, I think it was the corn. Yeah, it was the corn producers as well. So this then obviously led to the particular notion in terms of that the former slaves and the other free persons suffered considerable social and legal discrimination, as mentioned, as I explained to you about the American Civil War, and they were not citizens and were seen by many as unwanted foreigners who were taking away said particular jobs, as mentioned. Now, like the southern states, some northern states of the U.S. and territories severely restricted or prohibited altogether entry by many of these free persons. Now, this was, for example, the case in Illinois, which was proposed for Kansas and was proposed for Kansas under the Lecompton Constitution. What it technically means here is specifically that they set up specific legal barriers for many of these former slaves or persons. The Lecompton Constitution in 1858 was the second of four proposed state constitutions of Kansas, named for the city of Lecompton. And it was strongly pro-slavery. So it was strongly in favor of placing, you know, black Americans at the time into servitude or in forms of indenture, and technically stripping them of any particular human rights altogether. Now, some abolitionists, including distinguished persons of the time, such as the shipbuilder Paul Cuffey, believed that many of the American former slaves should return to the African homeland as if it were one ethnicity and country, despite many having generations of ancestors living in the United States. Now, that obviously had been the big problem. It technically is still the modern day problem as well, because I'll interject here with a piece of contemporary developments that have obviously taken place since before COVID up until now. Now, there's been this particular movement taking place, dear listeners. If you did not know, now you wouldn't. For example, the American rapper, Mos Def, he decided just before COVID to move to South Africa, and he went and decided to live in Cape Town. And there's obviously been the particular, you know, notable visits by well-known black Americans to various African countries. I won't say to Africa because we are not one country. We are still a continent with various countries and individual identities as nations. So I'll stick to the description I used. And obviously, as they come to the various African countries that they believe that they want to visit, the first particular culture shock that they experience is that they would think that they are stepping into a severely rural scenario, severely underdeveloped context or platform, and they would go like, oh my goodness, look, they've got shops in Africa. Most famously was the discussion that Helmut and I had here last year, back in 2024. What was the American comedian's name? Was it Kiki Palmer? Was it Kiki Palmer? When she was in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe. Now, if you don't know, dear listeners, if you've never driven by road to our neighboring countries, Zambia, Angola, Zimbabwe, Botswana, South Africa, and you've never seen everyday life in any of these countries, probably I can accept you having a small tinge of naivety, of ignorance, of not knowing. But if you go even just here into Botswana, you just need an ID, the new ID. Just into Botswana. You drive all the way to, is it Dwaneng? Or is it Kang? Even to Kang. Kang, which was just a service station stop. You will find an aspect of convenience there. All the way, if you take the Transkalahari Highway, all the way to Dwaneng. When you get to Gaborone, take the highway upwards towards Francistown. Or if you wish to go into Zambia, you drive across the bridge, you know, from Katima, across the bridge, you go to drive to Livingston. Is it Livingston? No, there's another town. There's another town before you go to Livingston. Check that first town and then you check Livingston. On the Victoria Falls, on the border with Zimbabwe. Go and check that town. You will find ATMs there. You will find the same convenience shops that you have here. You will find the same particular retail outlets as you find here. And you will ask yourself the most catastrophic but most critical philosophic questions in life. How are we positioned as Africans in other countries, in other parts of the world's particular psyche. How are we positioned? What kinds of stories are still being told of us? Why am I saying these particular things? Is specifically that the viewpoint that happened obviously last year with Kiki Palmer walking into the Food Lovers Market there in Bulawayo. Yes, I'll mention by name to give you the exact indications of what she did. And you can find that even on social media today. She walked, and I'm just not sure if it's Kiki Palmer specifically, but it was a prominent comedian, African-American comedian. I actually don't like using that name for them because I don't say that Brad Pitt is European-American. It's just weird to say it. But anyway, and she walked in with her phone and selfie, and she said, guys, look here. They've got, what was the term they use? We obviously use a different term. Yeah, we use retail shops. And she was like, they've got stores here. And I was like, what? Oh, what's with the particular shock and awe? I mean, yes, we do have food retailers and we do have clothing retailers and the likes. Now, this obviously speaks particular volumes, as I myself saw last year, also walking into one of Vintuk's food retailers here, where there was a bunch of European tourists who were walking around with their phones in the shop, sort of like to take a video of what the shop looks like, as if to say, look, they've got a shop with fully stacked goods in Namibia. Wow. But anyway, getting us back on point and technically into our next musical break, dear listeners. We're going to be taking a musical break and we'll be coming back right after that here on your number one talk radio station. This is my Sunday morning take and you are listening to Eagle FM. We'll be back right after this.
For the embers, stayed out for the breeze. I need to feel elements to remind me there's beauty when it's bleak. Stuck out long before lights down. Where do I breathe? Oh, I know. The more that I that I feel, the times that I jumped never were real. They say that all scars heal, but I know maybe I won't, but the waves won't break my boat. But the waves won't break my boat. Stones crash on the boardwalk. The wind rush through the trees. I keep my eyes peeled. The memories always fall short of what we could have been. Left out long before last call. I know the more that I love, the less that I feel. The times that I jump never were real. Say that all scars heal, but I know maybe I won't, but the waves won't break my boat. But the waves won't break my boat. But the waves won't break my boat.
more that I love, the less that I feel. The times that I jumped never were real. They say that all scars will heal, but I know maybe I won't, and the waves won't break my
heart. Let's take our time.
Now, obviously, as we come back there from the sound specifically of Take That with We've Got All Day. Before that, it was a little bit of Ed Sheeran with Boat. And obviously, you're finding yourself here in your early morning sessions live, obviously here from Windhoek, that obviously being here on Eagle FM, and that being my Sunday morning take, as we always find ourselves in each other's company from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m., where we dissect the particular talking points from everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and a little bit of everything else in between to help us understand what's actually going on around us. Now, one of the particular proponents is where we left off in terms of the explainers, as I indicated to you, was a gentleman by the name of Paul Koofy. Well, technically, if you read his name, you would read it as Cuff. But how it's pronounced, or seemingly pronounced, or should be pronounced, is Koofy or Cuffy. He was an African-American and a specific business person, a whaler, an abolitionist as well. He was born free into a multiracial family on Katihunk Island in Massachusetts, And Kaffi also became a successful merchant and sea captain himself. So, as you can obviously see, you know, there was a presence already of many of these particular freeborn persons from North America who were in various trades at the time. Now, he was one of the particular proponents, Kaffi, in terms of finding sort of like a foothold on the African continent in terms of establishing this new homeland. As many of them obviously would have seen, that many of the particular, you know, white Americans at the time did not actually like the idea of them being free. Now remember, I'm explaining everything to you before the American Civil War. Because if you were thinking when the American Civil War happened in the 1820s, you were wrong. Because in the 1820s, Napoleon was still ravaging Europe at that specific time. So, now Kaffi's dream was that of a free African Americans and free slaves that could establish a prosperous colony in Africa, one based on emigration and trade. Now in 1811, Kaffi founded the Friendly Society of Sierra Leone, a cooperative black group intended to encourage the black settlers of Sierra Leone and the natives of Africa generally in the cultivation of their soil by the sale of their produce. That's literally the slogan, as I just indicated to you there. That's literally the slogan as it existed. Now, as a specific historian at the time, a historian by the name of Donald Wright placed it, he described that Kaffi hoped to send at least one vessel each year to Sierra Leone, transporting African American settlers and goods to the colony and returning with marketable African products. However, Kaffi unfortunately died in 1817. And his project died with him. Now, the first ship of the American Colonization Society, the Elizabeth, departed from New York on 6 February 1820, for West Africa, carrying at least 86 settlers. Between 1821 and 1838, the American Colonization Society developed the first settlement, which later on would be known as Liberia. By 26 July 1847, Liberia declared itself a free sovereign nation. Now, the first ideas specifically of this particular colonization and where it came from are obviously some of the founding interesting, talking points for us to dissect here. Because as early as the period of the American Revolution, many of the white members of the American society thought that African Americans could not succeed in living in their society. That's not all, as the independent America after winning independence from Great Britain. Many of these particular white Americans believed that the black Americans should not be living or could not live in the society that they are now busy constructing. And specifically as free people, they didn't like the idea as well as also a free people or free persons discussion. Why? Because it has been mentioned time and time again, the particular founding fathers of the United States were all slave owners. They were all rich land barons with people working on the land, but it's not to say that they were paying the peoples any salaries or any particular wages. No, these were people that were just in servitude for as long as they lived to the particular land barons, the landowners at the time. I mean, if it's, my memory serves me correctly, I think it's Benjamin Franklin was one of the sort of like prominent ones in terms of the founding fathers of the United States. They cluster them all together. The guys that literally wrote the Constitution. All those gentlemen. Then you obviously also had one of the first American presidents at the time as well. Most of them were, if you think about it, they were a bunch of privileged individuals. Highly privileged individuals. Now, many considered the African Americans physically and mentally inferior to the white Americans, and others believed that the racism and societal polarization resulting from slavery was insurmountable or were insurmountable obstacles for integration of both ethnicities. So, Thomas Jefferson was among those who proposed colonization in Africa, relocating free blacks outside of the new American nation. And if you don't know who he was, Thomas Jefferson was an American founding father and the third president of the United States from 1801 to 1809. So he probably would have supported the idea of, Cuffy's, idea of a new particular homeland on the African continent. Now, he was also the primary author of the Declaration of Independence of the United States, and Jefferson was the nation's first U.S. Secretary of State under America's first president, George Washington. Now, since we've now slotted down the first ideas primarily of coming back to Africa discussion. Oh yes, I wasn't finished with the other explainer. So besides the description, the short case study that I explained to you in terms of the comedian that was in Zimbabwe, Bulawayo, walking around in the food lovers market there in Bulawayo, there has been sort of like a weird, I won't call it weird, but it is weird, a weird immigration of Black Americans to Africa. If in the 5 years, you know, since the 2010s into 2025 even. But guess where, guys, they immigrate to from the US when they say they want to come to Africa? Guess where they immigrate to? They immigrate to Ghana. They immigrate to Nigeria. There's another country they also immigrate to. But it's predominantly Ghana and Nigeria that they immigrate to. And some of them also immigrate to South Africa. In the actual case, many of them actually visit South Africa a lot. Obviously because of the English and obviously because of the kinds of service provision, you know, that you can get as a tourist and, you know, being able to move about and being able to interact and, you know, see other parts of South Africa. Obviously, Namibia is not that high because the specific kind of American tourist we get, even if I cluster it predominantly as America, because remember I'm talking about Black Americans coming back to Africa or visiting Africa or trying to move back to or move to Africa, you know, in all its particular states, is that the kind of American we get are predominantly tourists associated to Namibia's, game hunting industry. Yes, we do get American tourists also that is just there to come and see what Namibia looks like, but a lot of it from the statistics I continuously see when we look, when Helmut and I, we delve into the tourism sector and its particular importance and its particular, you know, indications, is that you find that many of the American tourists are associated to, you know, Namibia's game hunting enterprise. And that specifically is, it's a little bit weird. It is a little bit weird, but you know what? It's part of the tourism experience overall. Now, guys, the literature on the internet regarding many of these American, immigrants to the various African countries I've just mentioned to you. So they love, oh yes, there's also Kenya. They love, immigrating also to Kenya. Obviously because they would have heard of Barack Obama's ancestry, where Barack Obama is from. Specifically that Obama, because Obama's father was Kenyan. And then many of the Black Americans believe, you know, why not, you know, try to immigrate back to, immigrate to Kenya. So I've mentioned Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, South Africa, predominantly as the desired destinations. In many cases, if you go look at, and this is from their YouTube videos, it's from their YouTube videos all the way through to their, to even articles written about this particular phenomena, is that the first thing that many of the locals, so you find two views being displayed. The first thing that the locals, that's now the local, let's say the local Nigerian population where this American now immigrates to, the first thing that the locals complain about is the, I won't call it privilege, I'll call it an aspect of snobbish behavior. If you don't know what snobbish is, dear listeners. Snobbish behavior is when you have like an air to you. You think you're better than someone else. That kind of a thinking. And many of the local, I'm talking about Nigerian and Ghanaian communities that receive a lot of these particular African-American tourists or African-American immigrants. They go like, many of these particular immigrants think as if they try to experience or they try to have, they try to expect the same level of convenience that they were used to in the US. Second scenario is also one based upon language. Second scenario in terms of, a third scenario in terms of the differences that occur is the understanding even of, you know, basic concepts and conversation and stuff like that between the two, you know, let's say between the two, sets of persons. Because the African American obviously comes with their particular English and the likes. You move to a country like Nigeria where they speak, if you've never read Pidgin English, my guys, oh, it's a nightmare to read. Because it sounds like you are reading, baby language. You know, when babies make sounds just for the fun of making sounds. Oh my goodness. Now I could only think myself. I could only think into the aspect in terms of what many of the culture clashes would happen there. And this is in Ghana. This is in Nigeria. Many people that have looked up about South Africa say they love South Africa. Many of the Americans say they love South Africa. And then obviously we as Namibia, we factor somewhere in there into that, loving aspect of things. We factor in somewhere over there. Then comes Zambia and Zimbabwe, obviously as well. Obviously you don't hear much about, them going to Angola because Angola is Portuguese. And predominantly that's the way that particular picture, flows. Now, getting you back on track in terms of where we left off with the first ideas of establishing, Liberia, this is not after, Cuffy's particular idea passed away with him in 1812 or in 1809, sorry. Colonies in Africa were obviously one that was a major talking point back then in terms of, you know, trying to find a way of getting into the African continent, specifically with this particular grand idea of establishing your own territory for yourselves. So in 1787, Britain had already started to resettle what they called the black poor of London in the colony of Freetown in Sierra Leone. It's actually one of the weirdest things that I could never understand. The name that Sierra Leone has and its capital, Freetown. Now, if you guys have never looked up geography specifically of trying to understand the histories there of West Africa, Freetown itself is the capital and largest city of Sierra Leone. And it is the major port city on the Atlantic Ocean and is located obviously in the country of Sierra Leone. Freetown, in its own particular way, is Sierra Leone's major urban, economic and financial, cultural and educational and political center, as it is also the seat of the government in the country. So this would imply to you that technically the British were basically also behind the formation of Sierra Leone's particular independence. Or not independence, but its formation as early as possible. Now, it was a colonial administration territory, Sierra Leone, from 1806 or 1808 to 1961. And it was obviously considered part of the British Empire back then. Now, I just need to make sure about Sierra Leone's flag itself, because it has the Union Jack in it, and any country that has the Union Jack is in many cases considered as being part of the territory. Now, there were obviously also many particular loyalists. I'm not talking about, these were African American loyalists who were people who sided with the loyalists during the American Revolutionary War. So if you don't know what a loyalist was, is that loyalists were loyal to British colonialism in the American Independence War. term that's even present today in Ireland, specifically in Northern Ireland. You get the loyalists and you get the unionists. So the unionists, the unionists are considered the guys that are pro United Ireland. You know, there's one Republic of Ireland. And then the loyalists are the guys that are pro Westminster, meaning pro the British government, pro the British crown, pro anything English specifically coming through from the UK. And it's that particular identity, obviously, that persists even up until the day that obviously also began back then. Now, the many of the particular loyalists back then were obviously on the side of the British against the particular white British settlers that were combating the British army for independence during the American Independence War. And obviously they would have been punished because it seems that there was retribution, or some sort of revenge meted out against them, specifically for, you know, for bargaining for direct independence themselves as a group of persons or peoples. Now, these particular former American slaves who were loyalists back then, who had been freed in exchange for their services during the American Revolutionary War. Now, the crown also offered, that's not the British crown, also offered resettlement to former slaves whom they had first resettled in Nova Scotia. Nova Scotia is known as New Scotland. It's just another name for New Scotland. It's a territory or province in Canada. And it's a specifically, you know, a specific, and it's predominantly French speaking for some reason, that particular territory. But anyway, now the loyalists, these particular, as they were known as the Black Loyalists, were found, they both found that the discrimination, that they obviously experienced at the hands of the white Nova Scotians, and also that the climate, because Nova Scotia is a severe climate, it's very cold there to bear. So, some of the wealthy African American ship, Paul Cuffey, that we spoke about earlier, thought that colonization was worth supporting and aided by the support from certain members of the British Congress, of the U.S. Congress and British officials. He has started transporting 38 African Americans to Freetown in 1816 at his own expense. He obviously died in 1817, but his private initiative helped arouse public interest in the idea of colonization. Now, on that particular note, dear listeners, we take a short musical break and we come back right after that, obviously, as we head into what would be the last 30 minutes of this morning's edition of my Sunday Morning Take here on Eagle FM. And obviously, welcoming you to this slightly lovely winterish Sunday morning. But on that note, stay tuned, dear listeners, and we'll be back right after this.
Static white noise, submerged, no choice. A lever has just given. All day, all year, too close to. Congratulations, all to hear the crowd applaud. It's just this reckless mind, wasting time, lost every time that I fought. With a mind full of madness and a heart full of sadness, I'll go wherever you lead. With a head full of misses, all I've never.
Oh, times in times, way harder this mind, pushing on doors that won't open. I turned out any meditation. I breathe until the air ran out. It's just this mixed up mind, wasting time, putting my decisions in doubt. With a mind full of madness and a heart full of sadness, I'll go wherever you lead. With a head full of misses, all I've never finished, that person I'll never be. With a mind full of madness and a heart full of sadness, I'll go wherever you lead. With a head full of misses, all this reckless mind, wasting time, lost every time that I fought.
Coming back there from the sounds, specifically of UB40 from way back, with the sound, with the song of Food for Thought. Before that, you obviously heard the sounds of Take That with a Mind Full of Madness. And it does bring us up at least towards the first or last 20 minutes of this morning's show. That being my Sunday morning take, as we obviously welcome in, the, what is supposed to be the early, or the first indications of light into, if I can say, into this chilly Sunday morning session, because it's always around 7 a.m. ish that, you know, the temperatures become a little, if I can say, a little bit too unbearable, specifically during winter. For some reason, it's just as the sun has to rise, then the temperatures dip. It's just there. But anyway, getting us back into where we left off with our particular discussion, analysis, as well as also looking into, Liberia's particular independence path and actually how it came into existence and being has been some of the particular interesting notions to, look into, because we see that obviously the first idea for Liberia obviously stemmed from a program that already was in motion for Sierra Leone, obviously with, you know, peoples that were offered freedom and thus also being repatriated or actually being moved back to Africa in a specific designated manner to a specific designated program or project. This was then the particular copycat project, obviously, of Liberia that was set to take motion. However, one of the particular proponents and active participants of the program, that obviously being Cuffy, passed away in 1817. Now, it gets us to the notion specifically of the societies, or if you, they call it societies, but you can technically see these as NGOs or civil society organizations in a modern day context that actually started, you know, that actually geared up for this particular event or this particular initiative to kick off. So the American Colonization Society, as I mentioned, the ACS at the start, was founded in 1816 by a Virginia politician, Charles Mercer. Now, Mercer was a politician and a lawyer from Loudoun County in Virginia, who served in the U.S. House of Representatives and in the Virginia General Assembly. You also had another particular participant who assisted him in this particular endeavor, a Presbyterian minister by the name of Robert Finley of New Jersey. Now, the goal of the ACS was to settle free black Americans outside of the U.S., and the method was to help them relocate to Africa. So starting in January of 1820, the ACS sent ships from New York to West Africa. The first had 88 free immigrants. I say free because obviously they were recently emancipated. And there were also three ACS agents on board, and they were obviously white. The agents were to find an appropriate area for a settlement, and the additional ACS representatives arrived in the second ACS ship, the Nautilus. Now, in December of 1821, they also acquired Cape Cape Mesurado, also known as Cape Montserrado, is a headland in the coast of Liberia near the capital Monrovia and the mouth of the St. Paul River. Now, these were sort of like obviously deemed not to have been occupied zones that I'm describing to you, because, as mentioned, there was obviously a presence of the local indigenous population over there. Now, a 58, Cape Montserrado or Cape Mesurado itself is a 58-kilometer long strip of land near the present-day capital of Monrovia. And they obviously bought this particular piece of land from the local indigenous king that was there. His name was King Peter. Obviously, but the man's name was actually Zolu Duma. He was a Basade ruler of the land situated in Bushrod Island. Now, Bushrod Island is in specifically this county, this Cape Mesurado County in Liberia. There's actually a town named after him, this King Peter, King Peter's Town, where his palace was stationed, is in the area of Logantown on this particular island itself. Now, from the beginning, the colonists were attacked by indigenous peoples whose territory this actually was, which was, you know, fair to think, to consider. One of the particular hostile tribes at the time was known as the Malinke. The Malinke, or sometimes known as the Mandinka, they were predominantly from southern Mali. They were also from from the Gambia and also from Senegal and predominantly from Guinea. On top of this, this is now for the colonists, you know, what they encountered. Many of them also suffered disease. They also suffered from the harsh climate. They also suffered lack of food and medicine, and they also suffered from poor housing conditions. Obviously, it's now in terms of being exposed to the elements and the particular, other particular, you know, environmental hazards that were persisting there. By 1835, five more colonies were created by the colonization societies of five different states in the U.S., which were the Republic of Maryland, Kentucky in Africa, Mississippi in Africa, one by Louisiana Colonization Society, and one set up by the Pennsylvania State Colonization Society. Sorry, guys. The reason why I'm laughing is because they come and establish something known as the Republic of Maryland.
Who are we, you ask? The National Road Safety Council is a statutory body established in 1996 with a legal mandate to promote and manage road safety across Namibia. We believe every accident is preventable and every life is precious. Our mission is to make our roads, vehicles, and users safer based on effective road safety management. So, join our unwavering vision and commitment to zero deaths and serious injuries. Visit www.nirc.org.na to learn more. Do the right thing and save lives.
Now, getting back to the small side joke I was laughing at. Obviously, as you can understand, many of the particular immigrants at the time, which are obviously former slaves from the U.S., they didn't have any other particular indications. Many of them actually just spoke English. That's all. So it is a little bit a little bit comical to read names like Republic of Maryland, Kentucky in Africa, and Mississippi in Africa as the desired names that we use, because it obviously indicates where many of these particular former slaves actually came from. Now, another one was actually another particular sort of like territory, or was also planned by the New Jersey Colonization Society, but it never came to fruition. Now, the first colony in Cape Mesurado was extended along the coast as well as inland, sometimes by use of force against the native tribes, obviously there. So, meaning there were skirmishes and fights taking place, obviously, between, you know, the two parties. In 1838, the former four settlements came together to create the Commonwealth of Liberia. Monrovia was named as its capital, and by 1842, four out of the aforementioned five colonies were incorporated into Liberia, and the fifth settlement by the Pennsylvania Society. This fifth settlement, Port Cresson, was actually destroyed by indigenous peoples a little bit later on, because it was known as the Port Cresson Massacre, which was a lopsided battle that occurred on 10 June 1835 in the territory that is now known as Liberia, between former American slaves and descendants of American slaves on the one hand and the Bassa forces on the other. So what actually played down was that there was a pitched battle that occurred, and the Bassa forces on the other hand, this is now after the massacre, American forces retaliated and routed the Bassa, compelling them to terms of peace. Now, Port Cresson was a settlement established in West Africa in 1834, obviously in this particular aspect of Liberia. And it had a population of approximately 130 people, of 130 former African Americans. As well as also, they had one white representative, one white American representative of the Pennsylvania Society, known as Edward Hankinson. And according to a specific physician that visited Edina, Now, Adina is a specific district in Liberia. At the time of the attack, the local slave traders decided that they did not want to do business so close to a repatriation settlement and actually informed the local Bassa chief, King Joe, yeah, guys, they all had these Christian names, that they intended to move their business elsewhere. Now, King Joe didn't like this idea by his business partners informing him, you know what, we don't like this idea of actually doing a negative business where the business is negated by peoples that were sold in slavery being repatriated to the same close proximity to where we're doing our business. So, King Joe, who was equipped with arms provided by the American and European slavers, pledged to drive the slavers out. Hence, it led to this particular massacre. What happened then? On 10 June of 1835, Port Crescent was attacked by the forces of King Joe, and this is as the settlers were pacifist Quakers. Now, if you don't know what a Quaker is a specific kind of a Christian. Quakers are people who belong to the Religious Society of Friends, a historically Protestant Christian set out of denominations, or set off denominations, and obviously, you know, they follow a specific segment of, you know, in the Bible. Now, the settlers lacked arms and any other particular means by which they could defend themselves, and roughly 20 of the Port Crescent side settlers were killed outright by King Joe's men, with the remainder managing to flee the bloodshed and escape to the armed settlement of Monrovia, where Hankinson appealed for aid. Now, meanwhile, King Joe continued on to attack nearby Edina. However, a second indigenous leader, King Bob, wow, these guys and their names, intervened to defend the Edina settlement, and Joe was forced to withdraw. Now, there was obviously an aftermath. On the learning of the massacre at Port Crescent, Elijah Johnson, he was an African American who was one of the first colonial agents of the American Colonization Society, and he was also a veteran of the War of 1812. If you don't know about the War of 1812, it was the border war between Canada and America. If you ever wondered whether or not Canada and America ever fought each other in history, yes, they did. But technically, it was Canada by proxy of the UK. Or of the British, because it was technically, Canada was still fully fledged a British colony by that time. So, Elijah Johnson assembled a company of at least 120 armed volunteers and set out on a punitive expedition to engage King Joe. The Monrovia government routed the opposing forces, and a peace accord was signed on 6 November of 1835. In that peace accord, Joe promised to pay indemnifications, stop participating in the slave trade, and submit all territorial disputes to settler courts for adjudication. Hankinson, traumatized by the attack, refused to return to the devastated Port Crescent settlement. The demonstration of the military power of the Monrovian forces against Joe helped cement the central importance of Liberia among the desperate or disparate repatriation colonies being established in West Africa. Now, the colonists, obviously, getting you back to the aspect in terms of the colonization societies, the colonists of the African-American descent became known as the Americo-Liberians. And they, many of them were also of mixed race, which also included European ancestry. They also remained African-Americans in their education, religion, and culture, and they also treated the natives as white Americans had treated them as well, specifically as savages from the jungle, unwanted as citizens, and not deserving of a vote. It's quite, you know, full circle in terms of how you look at things. Now, this obviously came along to the next particular step, which was the rejection of colonization in the U.S. Now, the free people of color in the U.S., with a few notable exceptions, overwhelmingly rejected the idea of moving to Liberia and anywhere else, for that matter, in Africa. From the very beginning of the movement, now, most of them had lived in the U.S. for generations, which is a fact. And while they also wanted better treatment, they did not actually want to leave, because that's technically how any person who had been born of a specific land would feel. They don't want to move. Why must they move? Why must they be told to move? Just to feel safe or to have some aspect of identity. You should not move, technically. Now, In response to the proposal for black Americans to move to Africa, Frederick Douglass, he was one of the foremost thinkers of the time. He was an American social reformer. He was also an abolitionist. He was an orator. He was a writer and a statesman himself. He's the guy that never smiles in his photos. If you've ever seen Frederick Douglass's photos, he also experienced. Well, let me also explain to you a little bit. Frederick Douglass, unfortunately, was one of those black Americans who did not have such a very good experience in life, specifically his earliest years from being a young man, a child as well. Because what many people do not know is that Frederick Douglass's father was actually a white American slave owner. And it was not such a cool, it's things that I can't actually explain here on air because they would not be PG rated in terms of, you know, how Douglass's history came about or how Douglass himself, because he also wrote about, how he grew up. Yeah. So just so that you know, in that aspect. Now, Douglass actually indicated in one of his particular works that shame upon the guilty wretches that dare to propose and all that countenance such as a proper and count and all that countenance such a proposition. We live here, have lived here, have a right to live here, and mean to live here. End of quote. That's obviously what Douglass indicated back then. Starting back in 1831, obviously with William Lloyd Garrison's particular new newspaper of the time, known as the Liberator. William Lloyd Garrison was an American abolitionist as well, a journalist and a social reformer himself. And he's also known, best known for for his widely read anti-slavery newspaper known as The Liberator. Now, Garrison, followed by his thoughts on African colonization in 1832, and his support for colonization also dropped, particularly in the northern free states. Now, Garrison and his followers supported the idea of immediatism. Calling for an immediate emancipation of all slaves and the legal prohibition of slavery throughout the U.S. Now, the ACS, Garrison declared, was a creature without heart, without brains, eyeless, unnatural, hypocritical, relentless, and unjust. It was not, in his view, according to Garrison, a plan to eliminate slavery. Rather, it was a way to technically protect it. Now, on that particular note, dear listeners, it does actually bring us up to the end of our subject matter and discussion in terms of looking into Liberia and obviously its particular early formings and formations. We step into a short musical break, and after that, which will bring us up to the top of the hour, because we're about 4 minutes out from the top of the hour, it'll bring us up to the aspect of saying au revoir or goodbye in terms of this morning's particular programming. And ultimately where you can still continue on listening and enjoying the rest of your programming in our company.
You say you're gonna leave me, I'm begging you to stay. But baby, I can't get through anyway, yeah, no, I can't. When I wake up in the morning, you are gone. Little pretty thing, you know I'll be your love. You leave me crying. Please don't make me cry. Cause I can't say goodbye. Please don't make me cry. I know there'll be nothing left for me. All of the good times we spent together, you said it was me and no other, yeah. And now you wanna make me pain in the sun. Darling, I know you're gonna make me cry. Say goodbye.
because I know there'll be nothing left for me.
Kind of dream.